We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsberg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to another episode of In the Know on the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we are excited to finally kick off a podcast talking about the Pelicans' number one pick, who has finally played a couple of games. I know you guys have been waiting for us to talk about this, so we're going to make you wait a little bit longer while we do some obnoxious pleasantries to start the podcast. And Mason, what's up, man? You're in Atlanta. You can come say hi.
I knew that's what I was going to hear about. I just wanted to hear about your trip to Guatemala. But yeah, it was a longer week in Atlanta for on the work side than I had anticipated. I'm back. I'm there Thursday through Tuesday though, and let's fix that next time. But yeah, it was a busy day. Still got a chance to watch Zion's debut at least, and even though it was. Man, 9:30 Eastern time is not something I was enjoying, and I feel bad for you on the East Coast now for that, for games like those.
This is the singular worst time zone in the United States. It just is. But you met Charles Barkley, and I understand you did not ask him to be on our pod. What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't mention that. Yeah, so I was having dinner with my project team and went to and as I'm finishing up, the senior guy on our project lands from on his flight. He was meeting up with us on Wednesday for a few hours, and he asked if I go grab a drink while he had dinner. I was like, "Yeah, sure, let's go somewhere." And so we end up at the Four Seasons Hotel Bar and Restaurant, and we're talking, and some guy and this huge dude in Jordan sweats walks in. I'm like, "That's Charles Barkley, man!" And so we're like, kind of just should we go say hi? What do we do? And I'm the shy one. He was like, yeah, we're going over there right now. And so we went over there, and he's a big Bulls fan. He's born and raised in Chicago. Was talking about the 90s Bulls teams, and then talked a little bit about Boyle and I. We talked a little bit about Zion. He was so nice. I did not know what I was getting myself into. Didn't know if he was going to big time us and just ask us to get out of the way. I'm watching the Mavs Clippers game, but nope, he was the best. It was I mean, just like a few minutes of chatter, but really, really cool.
That sounds pretty dope. I still think he would have made an excellent guest on the pod, but I guess that's my job since I'm in Atlanta. I got to start working on these TNT guys. I'm going to ask NBA Bo the – oh, my goodness, my mic just fell. The best commentator, the best top 10 highlights announcer of all time to appear on our pod. I think that'll be a fun one. But So, I went to Guatemala, and Guatemala was amazing. I'm going to spare you guys – the detail by details and just focus on one particular story. We went to climb a volcano. It's a volcan Pacaya. Apologize for my accent or pronunciation. And so Pacaya is an active volcano, one of many active volcanoes in Guatemala. And I don't exactly know how tall it is, but the climb was pretty strenuous and took some time. I think it's about 5 kilometers, so about 3.1 miles on the way up, and then also on, I guess, on the way down. I could be wrong here. And you reach, you start from the bottom, and you climb like through some vegetation, and if you're not in shape, you can get a horse, and a horse will take you up to a certain point. And of course, I ain't no bitch, so I didn't get a horse. Sorry, I don't mean to disparage people like that. It is wrong. I should not use that term. My bad. But we went up to the point where the horses cannot go up anymore. And so you reach a point where there's no more vegetation because the lava has completely destroyed everything. And at this point, there's a lot of like very fine, like broken up lava that horses just can't walk up because it's very slippery. It's pretty coarse as well. So you leave the horses behind, you climb up, and then you reach a point where there's much larger chunks of dried lava. And so these are very, very sharp rocks as well. And you kind of have to maneuver through very uneven ground and do a little bit of semi-rock climbing to get where you need to go. It's as high as you can go. And you eventually reach a point where you can't really climb much further. And there's still like flowing lava underneath this dried lava. So it creates this sensation where some of the rocks are insanely hot. And like if you like throw water down some of the cracks, it'll evaporate immediately. So we made s'mores on lava, and there was a guy at the top of the volcano making pizza on lava.
And I saw this picture on your Instagram, and I was hoping you would get to this.
Yeah, it's just this dude was at the top of this active volcano, and he had a couple of baking sheets, and he had flour and cheese, and he had Prego sauce. That was his sauce base. And he was using the heat from the volcanoes as like a natural like brick oven, and then like taking it out of that oven, makeshift oven that he had made from the dried up lava, and putting it on more hot rocks to like make the pizza extra crispy at the bottom. And he was making a killing. So this baking sheet sized pizza was the equivalent of American $55, which is a complete ripoff. Given the materials probably cost $1 at most to make that pizza. But, you know, when are you ever going to have an opportunity to eat a pizza made on top of a volcano? Like, I'm not sure you can do that anywhere else in the world. Like, this guy has got to figure it out, and the tourists fall into it. But we had to get this pizza. And I got to tell you, like, after climbing for so long, like getting some of that food was quite rewarding. And it was a really cool experience. So the views were incredible. The climb was incredible. The whole country is absolutely beautiful. So if you haven't checked it out, I definitely recommend it. It's a fairly cheap flight from New Orleans or Atlanta or anywhere in the South. And yeah, it's just a beautiful country.
That's awesome. I'm gonna have to put it on my list. I'm always trying to find places that we can go travel to that's not like the long flight of Europe or Asia. How long did it take to get there? I guess that's a good question.
From Atlanta, it was a 3-hour flight.
Yeah. So like that's awesome. Like we've done like the Cancun trips and other beach areas, but like finding good vacation spots that aren't like you have to plan for like a 10-hour flight is something I want to do more of. So I have to go on the list.
Yeah. And it's in central time zone. So you're not even getting jet lagged or anything. So it's great. So yeah. Speaking of volcanoes and eruptions, Zion Williamson, his first game back, you know, we saw the first three quarters. He was really tentative and hesitant. And then in the fourth quarter, he erupted for 17 points straight and absolutely brought the house down. Four straight threes. Just one of the most surreal experiences of basketball I've ever had. I was just screaming up and down. What were your thoughts? What was going on through your mind?
First, pissed because I watched not because of what Zion did. I was watching at a sports bar around the corner from my hotel, and I left during a commercial break in the fourth quarter. By the time I got back up to my room, I think Zion had poured in most of those points. And so I had to pretty much after the game, I just had to, or I can't remember during either during the next commercial break or during or after the game, I had to watch those buckets. And so, like, of course, like it took me probably 5 minutes at most to get from the hotel bar to the sports bar to my hotel room. And of course, during that time, that's all it took, which is kind of makes the point you're trying to make, that the fact that he poured in all those points in such a short time span, it was ridiculous. So obviously some growing pains over the first three quarters. And I think as all this and the most recent game is a sign of great things to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he broke the internet in the span of 180 seconds. So good on Zion, and that was absolutely incredible to watch. The Pelicans unfortunately lost a game that was pretty important to a divisional rival that is also ahead of them in the race for the eighth seed, and they were plus in Zion's few minutes that he played, and then they were outscored in the minutes that he didn't play. Drew and Brandon Ingram had a pretty rough game. And again, the story was similar against the Nuggets. Zion had a pretty effortless 15-point outing. He shot amazingly efficient from the field. He looked like he was getting whatever he wanted, and he still looks like he's only moving about 60% of the speed that he was moving in preseason, in my opinion. Maybe not. Because in preseason, I don't think he was fully trying as well. Maybe 60% of the speed we've seen him move at Duke. And I don't think that's from an injury or conditioning standpoint. I think that's just a, hey, let me figure this out. Let me figure out how to operate my body in this sea of NBA bodies. And, when he gets used to this game speed, he'll turn it on. And as he's learning to trust his body more, he'll turn it on more. And so you definitely see flashes of insane athleticism or motor from him. I think in the Spurs game, we saw him just absolutely sky Jakob Poeltl for a rebound, and then he sent a block to like the 15th row against the Nuggets. And so that is all very much there. I'm extremely excited about that. But I guess let's start talking about how some of the guys are fitting in with Zion. The Pelicans have been starting Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Derek Favors. What have been your thoughts on that combo so far? And, Drew and B.I. have struggled these last two games. And do you think it is an adjustment thing? Do you think it's a spacing thing? What do you think is going on with those guys?
Yeah. So one quick comment on Zion that I wanted to get to full transparency, I have not caught up on last night's game. I've watched the Zion highlights and how he got his points. We had our office holiday party. We do that. We do it in January rather than December because it's easier to find places in downtown Chicago to do it. And so I haven't had a chance to watch the game. However, one thing that jumped out to me, I mean, a couple things, obviously the rebounding and free throws from last night, but I went to look at Zion's shot chart, and you could easily see a guy kind of still getting back into it, over relying on the three because of how well he shot it in his first game. And the fact that Zion's shot chart is just, it's 1-3 from the top of the key and is everything else in the paint. And so that's, and that one that's kind of, there's one that's kind of far from the rim in the paint. And that was, it was the turnaround jumper that he hit. And so it's just, he's getting his shots in the right places. He didn't fall in love with a three pointer just because he was hitting it in one game. You could easily make that case for some guys to do that as they're getting back in the swing of things, and he didn't. And so I think that was, it speaks to the kind of player he is and the way he wants to score. And so that's, I think it's pretty exciting. But as far as the fit, I think it's a combination. I think this is a hard thing. And it was, you could see it in the preseason. This was hard for Brendan and Zion to really figure out how they're going to play off each other and play together. And I think, and I still stand by the fact that what we talked about, what to expect when Zion returned. And I said, I fully expect Zion to Brandon to help Zion, and the fact that we've seen Ingram be more of an attacker than maybe we expected. Obviously, we knew Ingram was a good isolation player, but I don't think we expected him to really be this type of kind of almost point guard-ish in his ability to drive and either kick or drive and get a look inside. And Zion could be the guy to go clean up any misses. And so I thought there's obviously going to be some synergies there between those two. And it's the more important thing, I think, is, and I think this is something you want to get to as well, is how we create space for the other guys when those two are together. So, I mean, there's going to be an adjustment period. I'm not concerned about those two fitting together in the long term, but it's some of the other stuff around it that may be concerning.
So I'm going to say one stat, and clearly it's not predictive, but it definitely kind of goes against the eye test that we've been seeing. And there's a lot for us to figure out before we kind of make a decision here. But the starting lineup, Drew Holiday, Derek Favors, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, has played 16 minutes together. It's the most played lineup the Pelicans have had in the last two games since Zion is back. And they have a net rating of plus 20.6 to be exact. The offensive rating of 120.6. That's elite. They have a defensive rating of 100. That's elite. But it's looked pretty ugly when I've seen them play. I mean, the first, I guess the Pelicans have been doing well in those minutes. Now, what's contrasting is when Zion goes out and they sub him with J.J. Redick, and then you play that four-man lineup that really struggled in the beginning of the season, the J.J. Redick, Drew Holiday, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Derek Favors lineup. Mm-hmm. And they've also played 16 minutes over the last two games, and they're a negative 34.3. Yeah. And that's a lineup they started the season with before they started tinkering with Kenrich. And now, you know, they've had a recent slate of good games, but a lot of those guys have been in and out of the lineup. So it's been unclear if that's even an effective lineup. But I think – I don't know if I buy that, you know, Drew and B.I. are struggling as much as I just think that's a bad lineup. Here's the stats for the whole season, actually. And they've played 12 games. They have lodged 133 minutes. That lineup – with J.J. Redick and Lonzo Ball and Drew Holiday and Derek Favors and Brandon Ingram has an offensive rating of 110.9, a defensive rating of 117.7. They're a negative 6.8 per 100 possessions. A negative 6.8 for the whole season. And people could be like, well, you know, this means J.J. sucks. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it means J.J. sucks. I mean, I think it means...
Look, we know who's saying it's because J.J. sucks. So let's get beyond that.
I think it means that's just a terrible lineup of guys who don't fit together, because what's happening there is, well, okay, well, they want Lonzo to run the point guard. And so it's like, okay, he's trying to run the point guard. Drew and B.I. are people that naturally need the ball in their hands. So they're kind of trying to figure out how to play off the ball. And there's things they need to do to get used to that situation. And then they end up taking the ball in their own hands. And that put Lonzo off the ball. And you're like, okay, well, what's the use for Lonzo there? And then J.J. Redick is a $13.5 million decoy in those lineups, because they run – it's difficult for them to find shots for him in that structure, given what Drew and B.I. are doing, and given that Lonzo playmakes in the way that he playmakes, and you know, Favors is just – you know, ideally you want J.J. and Favors playing together and running a lot of handoffs and finding ways for Redick to get shots off a lot of those screens. But with all four of those guys, I don't know. I didn't see it at the beginning of the season. I don't really see it now. I think the rotation pattern for Alvin Gentry is going to become a lot easier when he's not restricted to playing Zion in 4 or 5 minute bursts, because then he can have a true substitution pattern and mm-hmm. and they can have a true lineup and play stagger guys the way they need to stagger them to mm-hmm. sort of balance out their skill sets. Because look, JJ has only played 5 minutes with Zion, and all five of those minutes came in the fourth quarter of last night, which were the Pelicans won those minutes, but they won them in a way you win like a war of attrition. Like they, the Nuggets sucked during that stretch, and the Pelicans also sucked during that stretch because they kept on turning the ball over. So the Pelicans will figure out their rotation, but that's something they definitely need to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just looking at some of the numbers you were referring to on cleaning the glass instead of you're on NBA stats, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it looks a little less gloomy on clean the glass. So if you remove garbage time, so Lonzo, Drew, JJ, Brandon, and Favors is 286 possessions, which is hilarious. That's the highest lineup played together for the Pelicans this year. I'm sure that's got to be towards the bottom of the league. And like in terms of how many possessions has your most frequently used lineup played together, that's got to be near the bottom. But that's effectively what like almost three full games together, and how many games played this season, like 45, so not great. But yeah, they're a net minus 4.6, so it's not quite as bad, but it's also like you're an above average offensive team and you're a garbage defensive team with that lineup. And so it's frustrating that that's where it's, and obviously that, you know, the defense leads to offense and vice versa. There's some interconnectivity there, but the fact that that lineup feels like, if you look at the guys there coming into the season, I don't think any of us would have expected that lineup to be bad on the defensive side. Maybe I'm just being naive, but I mean, seeing Drew, Favors there, and then
two good defenders. I mean, yes, Lonzo's been a lot better now.
Lonzo on reputation, I guess, and then Ingram.
He wasn't good in the beginning of the year. He's been a lot better now. I cannot overstate this, but like Ingram is one of the. People aren't going to like to hear this, but Ingram is one of the worst defenders for his position. He is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of
he's
that
a matchup
is,
defender, I think. I would call him.
Well, he's a matchup defender. No, I'm not going to say that, because I think what a lot of that is Ingram devotes a lot of resources to functioning and carrying the offense for the Pelicans, and that's important. So there's a little bit less left over, but a part of that is he has – very slow recognition of play development, and he's slow to rotate. And if you put him one-on-ones, he doesn't have the foot speed to guard smalls, and he doesn't have the strength to guard bigger players. So he's a matchup defender in the sense that it's difficult to find the right matchup for him. And I project his future defensively to be that of a typical high usage stars, where they just kind of defend the guy that's in the corner, where they defend the lowest usage perimeter player the opponent has. I mean, LeBron did it for years in Cleveland. Like, you know, there was a whole playoff series against the Celtics, and he just stood in the corner defending Jay Crowder. He's like, "All right, Jay Crowder, just do what you need to do." And you know, they do this with Harden, they do this with Devin Booker, they do this with Donovan Mitchell. It's not every. I mean, like Lillard, every star in the league does this, because there's very few two-way stars that are going to get up and own a matchup and guard the best player, the second best player, which is fine.
You can it's LeBron. Team. Like that's right. The list, and that's only because when LeBron feels like it, right?
I mean, at Kawhi.
Okay, Paul George. Fair enough. Yep.
But you know, and you know, Jimmy likes to do those things as well. But again, that there isn't a big list, and that's your point, and then that's our point, and you could still build a functional good defense around a player like that, and I just find it difficult to do when you have that and you have JJ and you had Lonzo and Drew like not playing up to their standards earlier in the year, and Favors being hobbled. I mean, like that's just, there's a lot going on there. And then you look at like, you know, who are guys in that lineup that generate turnovers, and that's just basically Drew and Lonzo. Like it's a weird mix for a defensive lineup. I mean, like we've seen the Pelicans tried out good defensive lineups with Ingram. We've seen Pelicans try out good defensive lineups with J.J. Redick. So you can't be like, these are the players that are sinking it. It's just like that group of five people is just not a good group.
Yeah, yeah. So somehow we end up on this tangent of not even talking about Zion.
Well, you know, I feel like there's a lot to talk about Zion. In any case, but you know, I do want to touch, just since we're talking about this lineup and what potential solutions may be. Obviously, listeners of this podcast know that I've been advocating for it to be Lonzo to go to the bench to help ease things for this lineup. And you'll be happy to know I'm not going to spend time in this podcast arguing that, even though I still believe I want to maximize the number of minutes JJ gets with Zion Williamson. And you know, in these, whatever, I'm not going to talk about this. What I do want to talk about is we predicted that this lineup would have trouble spacing things out.
Yep.
And while they've been effective offensively, we've seen, we're watching Drew struggle. We're watching Ingram struggle. And honestly, like, frankly, Zion is doing a lot of heavy lifting. In these lineups, he's the one, his attention is the one that's creating opportunities and looks for these others. And so Brandon Ingram had a quote last night, and why, you know, I think Andrew Lopez asked him if why he was like, what, you know, like where the struggle has been in terms of like reacclimating. And Ingram said last night, you know, Denver was sending an extra man his way all night, and he just kept trying to make the right basketball play. I didn't really see any openings when I had the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty damning. If
especially for a guy as soft-spoken as Ingram, who's not going to – and I don't think he meant anything malicious by it and saying that, you know, where I'm it's because of the guys I'm playing alongside. Obviously, that's not who Ingram is. But I think the fact that he felt comfortable enough to say that says a lot.
Right. And I didn't really see any openings when I had the basketball. It's like, well, why? Right. And I think there are three reasons why. Reason number one, Lonzo Ball. I know you guys want to talk about his improved shot. Teams still do not respect him off the ball. It is what it is. Reason number two, Zion Williamson. He needs space to operate in the paint. So when he doesn't have the ball and he's not setting a screen at the top of the key, he's in the dunker spot. It allows his man, it allows someone else to put another body in the paint. And that's fine. That's a consequence you live with because Zion does so many other things, but it also contributes to Ingram not seeing any openings, especially when you are playing with a guy like Lonzo Ball. Reason number three, Derek Favors. When you are playing with both Derek Favors and Zion Williamson.
I was going to say two and three are connected, right?
Yeah. Two and three, all three are connected, right? These effects multiply. So like, each player you introduce in a lineup that a defense doesn't have to respect, I don't think the effect is linear. I think it's exponential in terms of the spacing you have and in terms of the lanes that are available to you. So when you're playing the trio of Lonzo, Zion, and Derek Favors, you're not going to have much space. And it's going to lead to situations where Drew and B.I. just don't know how to operate and they end up taking bad shots. So here's my proposal, Pelicans fans and Laker fans who listen to this podcast. I think it's easier to mitigate spacing issues for Lonzo and Zion because they're more perimeter-oriented players. And so you can get more creative with them and use space in effective ways despite them not being major outside threats. And they're still – you know, if you leave them open, they're both going to take that shot. Favors is not going to take that shot.
I know where you're going, and I would say just before you get to that point, I think another reason it's easier is because those two guys are in theory above average rebounders for their positions, and so you've got to make up. And it depends on where you're going with the Favors point. So maybe I jumped in too early, but. The fact that you got Lonzo and Zion are guys who are gonna be able to rebound the basketball. You've got to rely on them for that. You can't just have. I mean, it's a tough position for Gentry as someone who wants to push the ball in any situation and just get out and run. But if you're gonna go smaller, you've got to have those guys helping on the glass, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like these guys are people that can help you. I mean, I think you know with Lonzo, Ingram. In Zion, you have enough rebounders to be a competent rebounding team, depending on, you know, should be irrelevant to the big that you put out there. I think that that's very possible. But where I wanted to go with this is I want to know what the future of Derek Favors is on this team. I think before these two games, it was kind of a no-brainer of how important Derek Favors was to this team. We saw how bad they were without him. We saw how good they are with him. And him being able to terminate possessions by rebounding, him being able to just be a smart defensive player that's in the correct position, that turned things around for the Pelicans over this past stretch. But here are a couple of things I want to point out. Point number one, Zion has played almost 50% of his minutes at center already.
Yeah.
Right? He's averaging about 20 minutes a game, 19 minutes a game or something. He's playing between 9 to 10 minutes a game at center already. Okay. The Pelicans have been very good with him at center already. Obviously, it's way too early to make any predictive claims, but I think anyone who kind of followed Zion in college and when they drafted him, and there was just a lot of chatter on how the future of unlocking him is him being able to play minutes at the center.
Yep.
And the Pelicans, who I thought would be hesitant to lean into that, have completely embraced it already. Yeah. I mean, half of his minutes are coming there.
How much of that do you think is the matchups that they played against, and how much of it is, do you think, is it going to continue into the future at this rate?
I think it will completely continue into the future. I don't think there is a single bench center
I agree. I just want to see where you were at on that.
Yeah, so the way they've been doing it is they're starting the second and fourth quarters with it. And I don't think there's a single center off the bench that Zion should be scared of that can even hope to contain Zion.
But I mean, the other thing is that this is the minutes that he's playing right now are not going to continue in the future, right? Like how his minutes are being distributed just because of the restrictions on him right now. So,
but
like
maybe they will. I mean, like, think about it this way, right? So let's say he plays the first 6 minutes. Let's say he plays the first 8 minutes of the first quarter when he's fully healthy, right? So that's 8 minutes right there. It's 4 minutes break before the next quarter starts. You insert him in the second quarter. You play him in a 4 or 5 minute burst, take him out, and then play him in another 3 minute burst to close that quarter. That's about 16 minutes. Okay? Mm-hmm. You can do the same in the third and fourth quarters where you play him 6 to 8 minutes to start the third quarter, rest him till the end of the quarter, start the fourth with him out there, play him 4 minutes or so, give him another 4 minute rest, and then close the game, like play the last 5 minutes with him, and you get him around 31 to 33 minutes right there.
Yeah, but only 10 of those are as a center, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, okay.
That's with the way the team is constructed now, and I'm sure.
So you just made the Jackson Hayes Hive pretty upset with that distribution.
Well, that's the next point I want to get to is, okay, let's say over the next 2 years, Zion is a player that averages about 33 minutes a game, right? That's fair. I don't think they want him to be a 36-minute game player. I think he'll play, you know, I think he'll have games where he plays over 40 just because that's the way the game is going. But I think they'd like to keep him kind of like where Giannis is at the moment. I mean, Giannis is barely playing 30 minutes.
It's
so somewhere,
it's like where AD was too.
Yeah. And I think AD ended up playing a lot heavier minutes as his career went on. But, you know, right, the first few years, you keep the minutes low. So let's say he plays 33-ish minutes a game. Let's say about a third of that comes at him at center. So let's say 10 to 11 minutes. I think that's fair, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
So you have 48 minutes available at the center position. Let's say to keep the math simple, he gets 10. Right? Mm-hmm. So that leaves you with 38 minutes. Mm-hmm. Hayes is a one positional player. Yeah. You're not playing him at power forward.
Can you?
No.
Is there any universe moving forward that he can play any minutes at a position besides the five?
No. I mean, like the way you're doing is like, okay, let's say you get a stretch big, but if you're getting a stretch big, then is that stretch big going to be bigger and going to match up against the bigger guys? Then, I mean, I think functionally he's going to be the center of that lineup, no matter what big you get. Mm-hmm. So to keep it simple, let's say Hayes is a one positional player, and if we have to find exceptions to the rule, then, you know, it's not worth discussing those exceptions.
Yep. But
let's say he's a one position player. He's averaging how many minutes per game right now? Let's see.
Jax?
Yeah.
That's a probably a weird stat to use because his variance has been one of the highest.
But we're going to just use as a baseline. He's averaging 19.5 minutes per game, almost 20.
Guess 20. So yeah, that makes sense.
20 minutes a game. I think it's completely fair to expect that he plays 20 minutes per game next year with little variance, with less variance than he has this year. So like this year, he might play like 31 game and like 10 another game. I think next year, his second year, as he's bigger, stronger, more experienced, you could easily pencil him in for 20.
Yep.
Easily, if not more.
Problem. Getting to be a math problem here.
It sure is. It sure is. So you are left so with 18 minutes to give to your other center.
Mm-hmm.
18 minutes. Okay. Do you want to pay Derek Favors, who is a free agent, to play 18 minutes a game? And you could be like, okay, well, Derek would take more minutes than Jackson, and he'll probably play like 25 or so. Okay, how long do you want to keep stunting Jackson's growth?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're already starting to see these fit problems, right? Yeah. And if you're Derek Favors, first of all, you're not going to come cheap, right? I'm thinking he's going to get at least 3 years, $60 million. Somewhere in that ballpark. I think that's a fair number for him. He's in his prime. A team like Atlanta, I think, would happily shell that one. He's playing for a contender and takes a small cut. But he's in his prime. His motivations are either going to be being on a successful team and or maximizing his earning potential and or both.
Yeah. It's you don't really think about the difference that it makes. Like, just me not even thinking about the Favors impact. It's like, oh, well, if Zion plays 10 minutes a game at center instead of zero, cool. We didn't see that coming as quickly as it did. But, you know, I think that makes sense for him in his career. But then it almost doesn't even register that you should start thinking about the rest of the centers on the team because it's only 10 minutes. But then you say, okay, well, before you were going to have, Favors at 25, 30 minutes a game and Jackson 15, 20, that works. And all of a sudden it's just like, oh, well, if we're taking 10 minutes out of the center position, that actually does matter a lot when it comes to Derek Favors. So it's a great point.
Yes. So what I'm getting at is if you're kind of seeing these fit issues materialize and you're seeing a future where perhaps the most optimized version of Zion Williamson is at center and you're seeing a future where Jackson Hayes is going to be a good and big time contributor, then how much do you want to lock in to a guy like Favors? How much can you get similar production from a much cheaper guy? Like, you know, like let's say the Golden State is in tax hell at the moment, right? You know, let's say you were able to take Kevon Looney off their hands. Is there that big of a drop off between Favors and Looney? From a girth perspective, sure. But like, you know, like how much is Favors got destroyed by Jokic last night? He got destroyed by Aldridge the other night. How much is Favors like what, like from a point of resistance standpoint, like I think the elite guys are always going to be elite guys and it's going to be more of a team game plan rather than an individual that's slowing those down. And, you know, like I think you can't factor in those type of matchups. I think you still need a big body to on at the end of your bench that is going to be able to step up and absorb some of those minutes when you need to, when there's injuries and whatnot. But mm-hmm. If I'm looking at locking in a big man for the next 3 years, for the remaining 3 years of Zion's rookie scale contract, like is that big man Derek Favors? Especially, you know, like it's clear this team wants to invest in Lonzo. So if this team is investing in Lonzo, and they should, they need to figure out if Lonzo and Zion and Ingram and that group of players can work together. Right. You need to play them. You need to give them minutes. That's understandable. So if you're doing that, I just don't see a future where Derek Favors is a longtime Pelican. And in fact, I would want to go the other way. I would want to get a stretch big. I would legitimately want to get a different style of big because Hayes is going to get bigger and going to take a lot of those traditional center minutes. And so I want a player that can play with the both of Hayes and Zion.
How much that your comment got me thinking about like who it would be. And so, yeah, I mean, first of all, I agree. Like it's, in the sense that I'm a little, I push back a little bit on the notion how much difference is there between Favors and Looney. I'm pretty high on Favors. I feel like I have been all season, but the fact that, that Zion from essentially not just year one, but game one is already playing minutes at the center. I don't think it's something I expected. And as a result there, yes, I still would love Favors on this team, but you can't ask Favors to take a pay cut and play 20 minutes per game just because it fits your team better. It's not going to happen. And so I'm very much aligned on the maybe even moving him at the deadline because a team would value his bird rights. And that's something that, and the Pelicans could recoup an asset or two for it. And so I'm certain the wheels are already spinning on who that player is. And there's an estranged player out in the Northwest who kind of fits that bill, and you could probably get some money. You could probably get something in addition to him. So thinking about a guy like Dwayne Dedman, is that a fit in your opinion? And I mean, especially if you can trade Favors for him and get Dedman and something else too.
Well, I mean, I think it'd have to be a three-way trade where it sends Favors to, like, let's say the Clippers, and the Clippers send some expirings like Harkless or whatnot up to Sacramento. Yep. And then you get, you get Dedman and whatever the hell back. That's a cool construction. I think mm-hmm. you can do that. I don't see Dedman and Hayes being able to play together.
No, definitely not.
I don't think so. So I think if I want to lock in a big, I would want one that can play with both my front court young boys. So
really? That's interesting.
I think so. I want that to be the future. I mean, again, I'm not going to be upset if they go get Dedman and okay, he's our stopgap. He's going to be our player until Hayes is ready. Mm-hmm. That's a perfectly fine strategy. I think he gives you a little bit more versatility than Favors does offensively, and gives you in a close approximate of what he can do from a rebounding and defensive standpoint just by being not Jahlil Okafor. That's a perfectly fine move. I think this is something I'm going to put out there. I've already been talking about this, and you guys are going to hate me because you're going to be like, "Oh, you've turned into Fletcher." And I think Fletcher made a really, really good trade proposal last night, and so I would not mind. I would absolutely not mind if the Pelicans acquired Kevin Love. Wow, I didn't hear any like.
I need to hear more because I still don't love that contract he's on, and he's not really going to be. I mean, he'll help you on the glass. He's not going to help you defensively. So, but keep going. I'm listening.
So, the idea with Kevin Love is like, okay, one, he can play with both of your players. Two, he gives you everything Favors gives you from a rebounding standpoint. He gives you everything Favors gives you offensively times like seven. I think defensively, especially with guys like Lonzo, Drew, and Zion, they can be fine. I think they can be fine. And then I think they can be good in non-Love minutes, like really good. With Hayes and or Zion just at center or whatever it is, I don't think defense will be that big of a concern. I think it's legitimate. I think there'll be certain matchups where you'll be like, "Oh my God, what's going on?" But I think the Pelicans have enough size and rebounding, and I think as they play together more, those defensive schemes will allow them to cover for a lot of Love's deficiencies. Because you know, like. Take, for example, a team pulling him out to the perimeter in a pick and roll, right? You're worried about Love defending in space. Well, typically, that's problematic when you don't have secondary rim protectors. I think Zion is going to be a pretty good secondary rim protector from the weak side. I think Lonzo and Drew have already shown propensity to make those sort of plays. Even B.I. has rotated from the weak side to help. So I think the Pelicans can situate themselves in ways where they can mask a lot of those defensive weaknesses Love has. And if they play a very principled defense, like, these are the shots that we're going to allow, and these are the shots that we're going to work to take away. On more nights than others, they will be more than fine defensively. That's my thought with them defensively. Offensively, I think it's a whole different ballgame. I think, obviously, it completely opens up the paint for Zion and Drew and B.I. And I think, in fact, I think it makes Lonzo's game better. I don't think Favors benefits from Lonzo's style of pick and roll playing where he hits you with an early pocket pass. I think if you have Kevin Love picking and popping, that's going to go extremely well with Lonzo's style of playmaking. And Kevin Love is a really good playmaker himself as a big man. And you're going to have five guys on the floor who can pass, who can make plays for others at an above average level for their position. And I think the offensive potential for that is absolutely absurd.
So at what point do we talk about the fact that he's going to make $30 million in 2022-23?
So let's talk about that.
Okay.
I've already been on board for advocating for a Chris Paul trade, who makes a lot more than Kevin Love. I think the cap goes up about 5-8% every year, sometimes 10%. Love is on a deal that is flat for the next 2 years,
and then
declines. So
it's opportunity cost for me.
That I think the biggest issue with trading for Love is opportunity cost, because it's like, okay, you're gonna need outgoing salary to get that guy, and I like, now if you were to do the trade now, the outgoing salary would be two expiring contracts. Derek Favors and Etuan Moore. I don't think it'd be a one-to-one trade. I still think Favors ends up somewhere else in a contender, whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be from a salary outgoing perspective, and then maybe even Frank Jackson. That's three expiring contracts, right? You're not going to get those salary slots back so easily unless you're re-signing these guys to reasonable deals over the next couple of years. So you're still filling the salary slot that Kevin Love would fill. The question is, like, you know, are two or three guys that you put in that money going to give you more than what Kevin Love gives you? And I'm not entirely sure, because I think the Pelicans have younger players who need to be getting those minutes that you would fill with those two or three guys, because, like, Moore doesn't really need to be getting minutes right now, right? So let's take him out of the equation. You're going to have guys like Didi come in, and you're going to have your own draft pick next year. You're going to have other young players who you need to continue to develop. And I think the Pelicans then have a pipeline of young developmental players who fill into role players rather than trying to find those same role players in free agency with an MLE. Like, they're going to be an above the cap team anyway. So, like, their mechanisms for getting these guys are like the MLE and the biannual exception. Sure.
But also, like, so they're going to be an above the cap team in the near term. But now what you're doing with the Kevin Love trade is that you're saying through 22-23, you're essentially not players in free agency for any. And I know, and you can say whatever you want about the history of this franchise not being a destination for free agents. And I think that's an absolutely fair claim. And we've even said it in terms of going get guys like Kevin Love or trying to trade for guys like Kevin Love who maybe are overpaid, but still, like, it's, you're in a small market. That's what it is. But I think it's the Zion era now. And I don't want to just assume that's going to be the case. And so, I mean, in 22-23, you're looking at Kevin Love getting close to $30 million. You'll have Ingram at over $30 million. And then, you know, between the rooks, assuming you buy into all three of those guys, it's another, I mean, obviously Zion, but I'm looking at, like, the contracts for Jackson and not that you couldn't move those guys if you needed to, but it's just basically saying that we are not going to be free agency players for the first 4 years of Zion's career. And that, I mean, and maybe I'm going overboard here. I know you could probably, I mean, you can say what you want about, okay, we can just move off Love's expiring deal a year early, but also if there are other teams that want to be free agent players in that year, that might not be easy.
So here's my pushback.
A lot of stuff to think about.
Here's my pushback. I don't think free agency has mattered for the first four years of any superstar's career. Not Kevin Durant, not LeBron James, not Chris Paul, not any of these young stars that are on terrible teams right now. Not Anthony Davis. I can't think of an example in history where a guy has been a star on a rookie scale contract, and there's been an outside established star that's looking to win a ring, that's like, you know what, I'm going to go play with that guy.
So I would need to think back to those situations to, and not that I'm saying you're wrong.
And that's one point. The second point is, I don't think you're completely punting on free agency. Trades are always a thing. You still have to decide what you're doing with Drew in 2 years, whether you're moving him for more depth or whether you're just letting him walk or you're trying to extend him, whatever the case you're doing with Drew, that's still a decision you have to make. I think that'll color what you're going to do in the future. Love, I think, will be movable, especially in his final year. I think you need salary like Love to go get another guy like, I don't know, maybe Karl Anthony Towns or Devin Booker that may get on.
Where's the name drop?
Or Bradley Beal.
There we go. All right. I was worried about you for a second, man.
I was like, who am I supposed to mention here? I think you need that. So, like, yes, I think there's a very real concern about punting on free agency. I think historically with this franchise and with every franchise, really, major free agent acquisitions happen when the star is on a second contract.
Yeah, and so I think that's fair. At the same time, my thought was that, you know, if there's any point in time to strike with a big name free agent, it's right before you sign Zion to that second contract.
For sure. Yeah. But here's the thing is, like, I think the Pelicans have so many assets that if it got to the point, they could dump Love if they want to. And that's not the ideal way of going about it. But sure. then at that point, your logic is this: well, if a tier one star wants to come play with Zion Williamson, then my price of getting that tier one star is giving up a first round pick to move Kevin Love. Then that's a price well worth paying. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, that's not something you consider. So I think salary concerns are real from an opportunity cost standpoint. I think I am comfortable saying that the Pelicans are not going to be greatly impacted one way or another by that.
Yeah. That was always my concern. I never, in terms of Love's contract, I don't think it's, and especially because of the way it's constructed, like, it's a lot of money, but at the same time, I don't see it being crippling, like, to the tune of, you know, you pay Ryan Anderson $20 million to sit on the bench. Like, I don't think that'll ever be the situation for Kevin Love.
Kevin Love's
injury concerns.
That's right. Well, that's the second major concern with Kevin Love is his injury history. Right. He has not been the most healthy player in his career. And so what you'd be banking on is intel. I mean, Griff already has a lot of intel on his injury history.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
From when he acquired him from Minnesota, from when he played for him in Cleveland, Griff knows. So if this is a move that Griff is making, it's a move out of confidence, right? I don't have that information.
Yeah. And obviously, his game age as well, right? I mean, that's a guy.
Oh, for sure.
He relies almost zero on athleticism. And it's IQ, it's instinct, it's, you know, understanding how and where to be on the glass. I don't think his shot is going to go anywhere. So,
he's just one of those players that is like the token that player that, you know, 3 years from now, they're going to be like, wow, like Aaron Nelson really extended my career. Like, he's that is Kevin Love, you know, that. And I think, you know, like, getting him out of Cleveland will do wonders for his mental health as well. So, I mean, that's this year on a Cavs team, he's averaging 17 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists. And he's only playing like 31 minutes a game. And this is on a Cavs team that is one of the lowest IQ teams. And, like, you've seen the clips of his, like, emotional outbursts where Colin Sexton or Darius Garland just have no idea how to run an NBA offense or find the open man or just do anything. So, like, he's pure comedy to watch in Cleveland right now.
Garland's ticking up a little bit. I mean, he's still having some woeful shooting nights, but I think he's starting to put things together. I can't say as much for Sexton, but it's still overall a mess. That's not me saying it's not a mess.
So there was a question in our slate of questions that was sent to us today about this Kevin Love trade. And I want to touch on it. And it's from our good friend, Ryan, I'm so sorry. I don't know how to pronounce your last name, but here, let me pull up the question. I don't want to mince it. So go in depth about why you think Kevin Love would work over Favors and if it's worth losing Etuan's locker room presence. Well, I think we already kind of talked about the on-court fit for Kevin Love. And I think, you know, going back to his ability to play with both Jackson and Zion already makes it a plus over Favors in that regard. I mean, if you think about how available Favors has been for the Pelicans this year and you're like, how much value has he truly provided and how much value is that just by him not being Jahlil Okafor? I think that's a fair question. But the second part of the question is if it's worth losing Etuan's locker room presence. Well, yes. In short, absolutely. One, you know, Love brings his own locker room presence, which is Love is one of Griff's favorite human beings. So I think there's no issues there, despite what's going on in Cleveland. Two, I don't see any reality where Etuan's on this team in 6 months, in after free agency. Like, why would the Pelicans want to retain him? They have so many minutes they need to give to young guards, to Nikhil, to Didi, more minutes to Lonzo himself. JJ's still on the team, and until he's not, like, you know, I don't think Etuan is ever going to be a deciding factor in terms of, no, we don't want to make this trade ever. And I guess that's the old me speaking about Etuan.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And it's a combination of, I get, and we've talked on this podcast this season about how you need to balance vets with young guys. And I understand that there are concerns about, you know, moving Etuan or other guys for that reason. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree with your point around Kevin. I mean, you can see, I wonder if fans have concerns about Love's ability to be a mentor because of what's happening in Cleveland, but that's not a concern that I have. I think it's just a perfect storm of events that's really, frustrated Kevin, and it's certainly not, I don't think that's something you would see here. I mean, it's just the team is just so young in Cleveland. It's weird to say that compared to New Orleans, because the team is young in New Orleans, but it's a whole different beast in Cleveland. That doesn't concern me.
How much fun is Kevin going to have playing from Colin Sexton to Lonzo Ball?
Yeah. I'm proud of you for making that comment and giving I mean, Lonzo a shout
out. Look, Lonzo is really good at finding the biggest vulnerability for the opposing defense. So he's really good at striking at the most deadliest spot. And if he sees Kevin Love in those situations, and man, I'll tell you, Kevin Love is really good at those early shot clock seal outs. And we didn't even talk about his outlet passes. Like, can you imagine Kevin Love outletting to Zion Williamson or Brandon Ingram or any of these guys? Like, this, that's going to be basketball.
So many connectors.
All the connectors leading to Zion. I mean, like, yeah. You're going to create what I think would be an on-crack version of Dwight's Orlando teams, where you just have all these super talented passers that are able to get Zion the ball, but also these guys are fantastic individual scorers.
Is there a light version of that you've seen around the league that you would be interested in? So of Kevin. So let's say we don't go down that path because of his long-term contract. What's the light version of that you could see?
The light version of that is Derek Favors and Etuan Moore to the Miami Heat, and Kelly Olynyk and Justice Winslow back to the Pelicans.
I'm all about that. And we've talked about, and I missed this conversation happening with you guys earlier this week in the group chat. But yeah, I mean, I've been higher on Winslow than I think most of y'all. And obviously his injury concerns over the last really full year.
His whole career. He's,
yeah. I mean,
the one player that might be less durable than Derek Favors is probably Justice Winslow.
Yeah. But I mean, I see it with him, and I get there's a major concern about a fit with Lonzo and that, but I would certainly.
Well, to me, like Justice addresses those like two major needs the Pelicans have is a bench playmaker, and N'Keal is probably going to grow into that role, but N'Keal is also super talented off the ball, and you're not going to want him on the ball 100% of the time. It's kind of been a disaster at moments, despite his flashes. And so you're going to have a bench playmaker. You're going to have a legitimate defensive wing that you can deploy throughout the game. And you know, if Ingram goes down or anything, you have a replacement to take those minutes. And then you have someone that can enable a Zion at center lineup from a defense and rebounding standpoint. So like if you're closing line, I mean, this isn't fantastic shooting, but there's enough passing and offense to make this work. If your closing lineup is Lonzo, Drew, Ingram, Winslow, and Zion, I mean, that's a tough defensive lineup.
Yep.
And there is enough speed and mobility and offensive skill there to get the job done offensively. I mean, like, you're going to pack the paint against those guys, but you're going to be like, it's going to be a bunch of smalls who pack the paint. And so, like, anytime you play a bunch of smalls, like, that's a win for Zion Williamson. And you're going to have Ingram still being able to shoot over those guys. So it'll be fine offensively, I think.
Yeah.
You got the talented enough to make it work. And obviously, Kelly Olynyk is necessary for salary purposes. He'll be your token starter.
And white guy, apparently, Fletcher.
Gosh. no comment. But he'll be your token starter that, and you know, he's a decent passer too. And he's not the shooter Kevin Love is, but seems like defenses love respecting white guys on the perimeter. So he gives you a lot of the similar spacing. I mean, like, look, you remember like Monte Yunus? Like, Monte Yunus couldn't shoot worth shit.
Wow, what a name drop.
and yeah, I mean, like, defenses would fly at him. And so I think it's similar with Kelly Olynyk, who isn't a bad shooter. He just isn't he isn't Kevin Love. Right. And so he would be the guy that kind of like, you know, you're okay playing small minutes, and he's a pretty decent passer. So that would be it. And you're concerned about Olynyk's rebounding ability, but you're hoping that Zion and team can gang rebound the hell out of that ball. I still think if Kevin Love had one less year on his contract, that would be the best trade out there.
Yep, I completely agree with that rationale. One guy we haven't talked about in a while kind of came up earlier in the season is Miles Turner.
I'm all the way out of the Miles Turner train.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all the way
He's like another guy. Like he's a career. He's having a down year right now shooting the three ball. But I mean, he's a career 35.6% 3-point shooter. He can help you out enough there, I think.
I just think he gets in the way of Jackson Hayes' development, and he's actually he's not that good. Like, I mean, I want a big that can play with Jackson as well, and I don't think Turner can. And I think he is good defensively, good in those drop situations, and then you get to good teams in the playoffs, and I think he's the type of defensive player that gets played off the floor like Gobert. Those are my thoughts on Miles Turner. I think Sabonis is way better.
I would rather Sabonis than Turner too. I'm not, yeah, but.
but yeah, I mean, I'm out. I mean, I think the argument that we're having with Kevin Love was a similar argument that we had about Al Horford. And you know, I think the difference was like, we're like, all right, we don't want to give Horford a 4-year deal. And acquiring Kevin Love now would be the equivalent of giving Horford that 4-year deal. But it's probably going to be, and you know, it's going to be the same price. And the difference is, you know, like Love is, like 4 years younger, I think three or four years younger than Horford. So that's a major thing. But a lot of the same logic applies. Is like, you know, they space the floor, they pass the ball, they're good veteran leaders. They enable the youth to be a lot better. Mm-hmm. And so I would not be upset at all for Kevin Love. Now we've talked a lot about Love, just kind of briefly touching on Favors. Again, what would you say are the odds he is on this team after the deadline?
Given the way that their Pelicans are playing them, and like, I And similar to his minutes and how they're being distributed, I think that there's a lot of I think the front office has something to say about how, the kind of lineups he's playing with. Would you agree with that or no? You think it's like the fact that he's playing so much center already, and that's do you think that's part Griff?
You know, I think that's coaching staff.
Okay.
I think they are wholly comfortable with it. I mean, I don't think.
But wouldn't you think that Griff has to sign off on something like that? Like, oh, play Zion at center. I mean, because I mean, go.
Yeah, so with such I think there's guy, a sign off, but I don't think it was him initiating that conversation. Sure, okay. Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, we're fine with that. Just do it.
Yeah, and so given all that, yeah, I'd say the odds are more likely than not that he's moved to the deadline just because. I don't think you can justify giving him his next contract if you're going to be playing Zion at center so much so quickly. So I think it's over 50%, and there are teams that could definitely use him who are in the playoff chase. I would be surprised if he's on the roster, which is such a stark turn for me even for like 2 weeks ago, just because I didn't think the Zion in the 5 minutes would be happening yet. And so I say over 50%. Where are you at?
I think I'm there too. I think it all comes back to me, and I look at the available center minutes next year and then the year after that, and how much do I really want to pay a guy that's going to be, I think, fairly expensive to retain, especially mm-hmm. because I feel like incumbent teams that have bird rights on a guy end up overpaying to keep them anyway in the form of like an endowment effect. You know, like I don't want Derek Favors to be David Griffin's Omer Asik. And I think if you sign him to a long-term deal, like that's what you're getting you sign a player who has utility, but diminishing utility because your best player is going to end up taking minutes at that spot.
I was about to be angry at that comparison, but the more I think about it, the more right I think you are.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think the NBA exists anymore where you give those type of 5-year deals to role players. So, I mean, it'll obviously be a shorter deal than Omer Asik. It'll probably be double in monetary value per year. You know, like, you know, Omer got like 552 or something where this is, he's going to get like 360. He's like, you know, so I just don't want him to be the Asik of David Griffin. And that's my concern is we quickly realized like, holy shit, Zion's really good at this thing. And you painted yourself in a corner with Derek Favors. So yeah, I'm with you. I would say that if that is the logical thought process, then the time to move in is now.
Yeah.
And you can, and the bird rights that we talked about would be attractive to a contender. And you know, a team like the Clippers could lock him in for the next 3 years and go all in with him as their core, because they need a guy. They need someone against KD, you know.
Yeah, I think it was in Zach Lowe's recent. So the one that he actually praised Favors. I think there was conversation around the rebounding concern for that Clippers team with Trez at the five, and so I think he answers a lot of problems that the Clippers are having right now.
Well, yeah, and then there's like Zach Lowe. Good thing you mentioned him, because on a podcast he recently mentioned, he's like, I think the Pelicans are going to be sellers. And what does that mean? I mean, I think process of elimination is like, okay, well, you have like three pieces you can sell. You have to Etuan Moore, JJ Redick, and Derek Favors. Drew's not going anywhere. I don't think JJ is going anywhere. Just the way they talk about him organizationally, but Favors? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess it depends on how you define seller, right? I mean, in theory, the Pelicans could trade Favors and get a guy who fits just as well, but maybe fits better for the future than maybe for the last 30 games of the season. So I am curious what sellers means in this context, because I don't think they're going to go and try to get more draft picks. Maybe they try to move one draft pick up and make one better, but I don't think
they're adding them, maybe.
Yeah, so. Interesting.
Okay. Well, we hit on a lot of topics, so we can wrap up here. Till next time, we'll hit you up with a mailbag. Thank you for listening.
it's ready.
Boy, the things I go through to get auto loan rates as low as 0.99% APR for 60 months on new vehicles with PenFed.
You are aware that you don't have to be a military member to save hundreds on your auto loan, aren't you? Anyone can join PenFed.
As someone terrified of heights, I probably should have looked into that.
Probably.
Drop me off at the shore.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/autos or call 1-800-247-5626. Advertised rates available through the PenFed Carbuying Service. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.